I'm here in Colorado, about to start a series of debates around American universities. It's me against Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico. And the subject is globalism versus nationalism. Do we believe in the nation state? Do we believe that is the unit that matters most? Or should we be more interconnected through organizations like the European Union? It promises to be very lively.
We're backstage here in Boulder, about to go on. I've met President Fox, and it's clear we have different points of view. It could be a polite debate. It may not. You never know.
Now for the reason you're all here this evening. President Trump's recent move to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports is just his latest policy decision that has disrupted the traditional political order. Support for the decision has split conservatives between those who favor free trade and those who want to protect manufacturing jobs. But it's also attracted some liberals who are increasingly skeptical of the merits of trade. But the tariff debate is just a microcosm of a broader dispute that's currently dominating public policy, and that's the dispute over nationalism versus globalism. We have invited to see you here tonight two of its best representatives, Nigel Farage and Vicente Fox, to debate this issue for our initial campus liberty tour. Nigel Farage is co-founder and long-serving leader of the UK Independence Party, serving from 2001 to 2016. He was the face of the successful campaign to take the UK out of the European Union in the 2016 Brexit referendum, positioning the referendum as the start of a global populist wave against the political establishment. Farage has been a member of the European Parliament for Southeast England since 1999 and co-chairs the Europe of Freedom and Direct Democracy Group. He has been noted for his sometimes controversial speeches in the European Parliament and his strong criticism of the euro currency. The Spectator magazine called Nigel Farage the most important British politician of the last decade and the most successful. He was shortlisted for Time magazine's 2016 Person of the Year, but was beaten out by some guy named Donald Trump. Let's welcome to the stage Nigel Farage.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the most important thing to say is thank you to the university and the backers and the sponsors, because one of the things that's happening in British universities and American universities is those that have conservative opinions, those that have perhaps nationalist opinions, are being no-platformed. We're living in an age where it seems those who call themselves liberals actually want to stop conservatives from even speaking. So it's a pleasure to be here and to be involved in this evening.
President Fox, I have a question for you. Let's stipulate that President Trump is not a diplomat. Let us stipulate that protocol is not his outstanding characteristic, and let's stipulate that oftentimes he raises concerns in the most provocative way, sometimes destructively. But having said that, doesn't President Trump have a legitimate point about immigration? Let's consider these statistics. Right now, the United States has more than 46 million immigrants, and that understates it. That's 13.5% of the population, the highest level since 1890. If current trends continue, that will be 18% of the population. According to the Pew Foundation, a liberal polling outfit, the United States has taken in, since 1965, since liberalizing our immigration laws, 72 million people. That's more than the population of France. And not only that, the attitude to immigration has changed so that assimilation is no longer given the priority. Hence, because of the way things have worked, several studies have indicated that immigrants now, for the first time, receive more in services than they pay in taxes. How can a country be free if it can't defend its borders and national cohesion? Doesn't he have a point?
Number one, every nation has absolute right to control its borders. Nobody is discussing that. Nobody. Not even Mexico. We're not discussing that. If you want to build a wall, pay for it. You are going to pay for it. We are not paying for that fucking wall. That has to be made clear. This world has 8 billion people, and it belongs to all of us. And that's what Dalai Lama said. The world belongs to humanity, to humankind. Not to United States, not to China, not to Russia, not to Mexico. It's all of us. Maybe he's thinking of killing some of those people because he thinks there are too many. Maybe that's why he's close to atomic bomb and being so aggressive.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry. You have a chance to speak later.
Let's give Mr. Farage a chance, and I have a few specific vectors for your response.
I've got lots already. Earlier on, President Fox said that the Brexiteers had used fear. And then, a few minutes later, he suggests that the US president may be up for killing millions of people. Who's using fear now? I think, frankly, that was beyond the realms of reasonable debate. And can I just say to you that when you deride the Brexit referendum and say that's not democracy, actually, it was the greatest exercise of democracy in the entire history of Britain in terms of the numbers that took place. And referendums can be very useful. Switzerland uses them more than any other nation on earth, and I would say Switzerland are probably the richest, happiest, most democratic people on this planet. So referendums can work. Now, you know, you said that nations have the right to defend their own borders. And I think perhaps there's a key piece of information you're missing about Brexit. And it's this. This is a British passport. But the first two words on it are European Union. And what it meant as members of the European Union is this passport wasn't just for 65 million Britons, it was for another 450 million people from across the rest of Europe, and we had net migration into Britain for 60 years after the war, ran at an average of 30,000 people a year, and it went up to a third of a million every year. So we couldn't control immigration sensibly under EU membership. That's why we voted Brexit. It wasn't because we're against other people. It wasn't because we don't want immigration, we want it controlled.
A few days later, we did the same debate in Washington, but this time, the globalist cat was out of the bag.
And I end up by saying, you visit China today, you visit the East, no more ideologies. They don't fight like dogs and cats here, like Republicans and Democrats do every day. They're pragmatic governments. They work on technology, on exports, on trading.
They're on authoritarian regimes.
Huh?
They're authoritarian regimes.
Well,
they put people in labor camps. They torture them.
I began to doubt how smart is democracy, because democracy is not delivering.
I think the globalist cat was just let out of the bag. We heard President Fox's contempt for democracy and for what people think. I heard in previous debates him saying he didn't even think the Brexit result was a fair democratic result. And this is what the globalists want.
It was very interesting. You know, a good audience, an American university, clearly with a much more liberal than conservative bias. But a well-organized debate, and students that listen thoughtfully and were encouraged at the beginning and the end to engage in critical thought, which means that you respect the fact in a democracy that somebody else has a different point of view. And I thought, actually, it was a great success. I wish this was happening in universities in Britain and America every day. Well, all this week I'm going around American universities, and I'm doing these series of debates against the former Mexican president, Vicente Fox, who is a personality, is one way of putting it.
Some may say pretty bonkers, but hey, the whole point is we're trying, and the Steamboat Institute have backed this, and we're trying to kind of get away from this idea of safe spaces, of no platforming people. But I've come across something that I think might be a little bit of a counter-revolution. And it's an organisation called Turning Point. It's been going since about 2012. It is profoundly conservative and Trumpite in its ideology and its views. It wants low taxes, small government, that kind of thing. And I'm very pleased to be joined by Candace Owens. And you are the comms director now for Turning Point. So is this a sort of hard right, radical, alt-right? I mean, what is this thing?
Yeah, I guess if you consider capitalism radical, if you consider loving your country radical, if you consider independence radical, if you think that small government is radical, then we're about as radical as it gets.
Well, actually, I mean, as we're sitting here in D.C., the concept of small government is very radical.
It's very radical indeed, but we like to consider ourselves a common sense organization. But to many people in America and obviously abroad, common sense is pretty radical.
So what's the objective of Turning Point? You know, why is there a need for it?
So I'm sure you've visited some universities in America, as you mentioned, and you'll notice that these college campuses have become islands of totalitarianism. Charlie Kirk, who's a founder of TPUSA, always says what they're encouraging on campuses is for people to look different but think the same, right?
Yes, I heard that.
Right,
yeah.
That's exactly what's going on. So you have teachers that are encouraging students only to think in terms of liberalism. Students that don't even grasp the concept of socialism are wearing socialism T-shirts, not understanding that over the last 100 years, those concepts have killed 100 million people worldwide, right? So what we're trying to do is introduce different ideas. And those ideas are really strong about understanding the economy, understanding why capitalism is the only means to defeat poverty worldwide, understanding that rich people are not the enemy. And above anything else, I think it's a return to patriotism, which we're really fond of. And I think that, especially talking to you, I think you understand
I get it. But hey, you know, I was 54 yesterday. Because what I'm saying to you is that the impression we get is that the millennials, you know, both on my side of the pond and this side, are kind of signed up fully to this liberal agenda, that they don't like Brexit, they don't like Trump. And yet, from what I can see, your organisation is established in some way in about 1,000 high schools, universities. So tell me, are there actually some young people, apart from you, who think these things are a good idea?
Absolutely. Our numbers are growing every single day, and they're starting to understand these concepts that traditionally are not taught in the school system. I always say that the biggest battle that we're fighting in America right now is a fight to have our schools back. Right, the government has nearly indoctrinated students. So when you think about the public school education, you think, oh, it's free school, it's great. School is by no means free. I say all the time that what people are giving up is their minds. You have 18 years of free school, which is just 18 years of being indoctrinated by a wicked government, if you will, right? The government that's teaching you to, at this point, be anti-American, which is counterintuitive to self, you know, and at the same time, they're not teaching you elements of the economy and capitalism, and that's a huge problem. So what we've been able to do, and quite successfully, and you'll see this at the end of the year, we have this major conference called the Student Action Summit, where these kids come out and they're shouting things like two genders, right? We're bringing science back. They're shouting things like socialism sucks, and we're making
again. Is joining Turning Point like coming out? Are these sort of private thoughts people have had and been too afraid? Because I've seen a lot of evidence, a lot of testimony, that, you know, young people in class, they might be studying economics or history or politics, you know, who state an opinion in a classroom and are kind of shouted down, almost hounded for having that view. So is Turning Point, is it in a sense giving people the confidence to believe they can have these opinions,
correct,
they're not on their own?
Correct. We're making it a trend again. We're giving conservatism a fresh look. And we're letting these kids know that they do have the permission to combat those essentially bad ideas. That's exactly what it is. These teachers are teaching bad ideas that don't work. So we're arming them with the tools, the facts, the resources, and the friends to look around and say, I'm not the only one who thinks this way. There are tons of other students that think the exact same way as I do, and I'm not going to back down from this fight.
Yeah, I mean, actually, do you know what? Supporting UKIP was like that. And people say sort of behind the back of their hands, actually, Nigel, I support you. But it's almost like admitting that you've got some sort of terrible secret. So giving people a platform to do that is good. But, you know, you can sit there and talk to me about patriotism and all these things, and I've been through this process. I've built a small organization into a big organization. The problem with all of these things, with all conservative movements, is how do you stop, you know, genuinely dangerous people with very bad and very extreme ideas from getting into your organization and tarnishing your name?
I don't think what we try to do is, you can't stop that, right? We're going to have that. We fight that every single day. We're fighting the media in the same way that you see Trump is fighting the media. So they've got the money, they've had the resources, and for a long time they've had the power in this country, right? So what we try to do is not to necessarily try to stop them, but just to combat them. The best way to counter a bad idea is with a good one, right? So that's what we're doing every single
day. But if I'm a student and I say, okay, I'm going to join Turning Point, it's a pretty easy thing to do. But I might, 3 months down the road, suddenly start blogging, saying the Holocaust didn't happen, or, you know, some really horrible out there stuff. You know, how do you deal as an organization with young people that join and suddenly try and take it in a different direction?
Okay, so we haven't had that, haven't really crossed that problem yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't had any students that have gone out there and said the Holocaust didn't happen. I guess it's one of those things that, and I'm assuming Charlie has thought about this a lot of times, it's a bridge we're going to have to cross when we get there. But what we're seeing right now is this is not an evil organization. These aren't evil ideas. They're just people that are patriotic and that want to fight for this country, because right now we truly feel that this is the most exciting time to be alive in America, and that if Donald Trump hadn't won the election, we would have lost this country. And I'm sure you had a similar sentiment and a feeling when you were out there arguing for Brexit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, I very much take the view that in 100 years' time, when we look back at this period of history, 2016 is the standout year. It's the pivot.
Yeah.
It's actually the year in which the nation state made a comeback.
Right.
It's the year when we got back against the globalists, the corporatists, and started to say, look, you know, the small man and woman deserves a fairer chance in society. So, no, I'm completely, I'm on this ticket, and I get it entirely. So you've got a big conference coming up, you said, later in the year.
We've got a lot of conferences. So we do the Young Woman Leadership Summit, and we do the Student Action Summit. We're doing, for the first time ever, the Young Black Leadership Summit, which is super important. And the question we always get with that is, you're using identity politics, and you say woman, black, student, but the only way to defeat identity politics is to use it against itself, right? it really
because,
is
again,
the
you
way.
See, the impression is that young conservatives, those that exist, are all young white males.
Right,
but
exactly.
You're kind of trying to break that mold.
Right, exactly. So we're super excited about all of that. But the big one at the end of the year is a Student Action Summit that we do every year. Last year, there were 3,500 kids. This year, we're expecting double. And I'm telling you, it is like a rock concert. Like, it is the most amazing thing. It's like when Ben Shapiro hits the stage, it's like Elvis Presley came back from the dead. And it's amazing. These are just ideas. Dennis Prager, right, who's in his 70s. These kids are like fawning over him and screaming with signs. And I say to everyone, if you are at the end of the rope and you've lost faith or you've lost hope in the direction that millennials are going into, that's the place you need to be at once a year to understand the direction that this country is actually going into.
And have you got some support yet from elected congressmen, senators, that kind of thing?
Oh, yes, for sure. They actually, we have people that speak at our conferences. Charlie is obviously very in the weeds on politics, does a lot of work with the first family in general. You know, that's not what he does in his personal life, not with the organization, because we can't, as a 501c3 organization, take too strong of a political stance. But we've been in just growing every single year. I mean, we've had more and more outward support, and we've been fortunate enough that the President of the United States has tweeted us. Pardon. That the President of the United States has tweeted us multiple times and just said thank you for the work that you're doing and the fight that we've taken upon ourselves for this country, the youth of America. That's if you're invested in the future, you need to be invested in the youth.
Now, I can see that you're taking the fight back to some of these hard left professors with your professor watch list. Now, I'm just wondering, is this modern day McCarthyism in America?
People don't like this professor watch
list. I bet.
They do not like this professor watch list, right? Because for so long, the professors haven't been watched, right? So they've just been saying whatever they want to these students, and there have been no repercussions. Listen, it's a public school system. Parents should have a right to know what the teachers are saying to their students. They're essentially trying to parent these students. When you really think about this and break this down, students spend more time with their teachers than they do with their parents. Get up in the morning, parents go to work, they're in school for 6-7 hours, maybe they have some after school programs, and then they come home, right? That's a major problem. That means, what is your teacher saying to your student? We're seeing every single day, or I guess you could say every couple of days, a new story is breaking on the news about what a teacher said to a student in a classroom. And fortunately, we're armed with technology now. We've got these smartphones. Well, all we're saying is utilize it. We're not recommending anything. We're just saying, listen, this teacher said that. Whatever happens, happens. You're accountable for your own words.
But as I say, it sounds a bit like the sort of McCarthyite list to be published of, you know, suspect communists as it was back then. I mean, I'm quite sure that if I was sitting here now talking to you from the New York Times, I would say to you that you're inciting hatred against these professors.
I think that's exactly what the New York Times said about us, actually. That's remarkable. They did do a story on it. I'm not sure if it was the New York Times or the New Yorker, but they did a whole blaring article on the professor watch list because they're nervous. And listen, I'm fully in support of it. I say, listen, if there was a video on you, why would you be nervous as a professor? What are you saying? You're supposed to be teaching students whatever the subject matter is. Why would you be nervous if what you were saying became public? You're in a public school system most of the times. You know, stand by what you say. Either you're teaching students or you're indoctrinating them. If you're indoctrinating them and you're threatening them and using intimidation tactics, which is what we're seeing more and more, then you're going to have a problem with this watch list.
Yeah, I can see that it's perhaps the most controversial thing that you do.
100%.
Although we've got a similar thing back in the UK. We've got a series of what are called Monet professors, where chairs in universities are paid.
Years ago, how is that plausible? No one would be insane enough to suggest that America is a more racist country today than it was 60, 70 years ago. Perhaps they would. Democrats
yeah,
would.
Yeah, I mean, they would, and they would say that Donald Trump, in fact, had kind of turned the clock back, and that America was more divided today than it's ever been. I mean, that's the criticism, isn't it?
Yeah, but Donald Trump just got into office. You're going to have to explain to me why, over the last 60 years, a single motherhood rate in the black community has jumped by 73%. You're going to have to explain that to me. And the reason is simple, because the government is over-involved in our lives. When you talk about the welfare program. So my job, my mission is to grow that arm of Turning Point. Hyper-focus in the black community, understanding, which is what I explained to Charlie, that black people aren't necessarily at those universities. Black people tend to drop out of school. We have deplorable rates in terms of graduation.
So is Turning Point not just for university students? Is it for the broader population?
Oh, we're in high schools.
Well?
We're in high schools,
right,
as well.
Yeah,
and that's the next logical step. So it is to go broader, and that's what I'm trying to help them do, to understand that there's so much you can be doing in the projects in the black community where they're just not given any different ideas. So they spend their entire lives enslaved to the public school system, and then it's like, go back to the projects in which you came from. If I say all the time, if you point to me to a black person, I can show you that they're a conservative, but they just don't know it. Right, so we're trying to make them know it, to help them understand where their lives are, what's happened, what went wrong, and that the solution to that is less government involvement and a return to self-confidence in our communities.
The one figure I've seen estimates that about 6% of high school teachers and university professors, about 6% are conservative, and about 94% are on the other side. Do you hold out any hope that the education system itself can go through a fundamental overhaul so that we can get actually a balanced view being given to young people?
Absolutely. I think if we focus on it and we have organizations like Turning Point that are able to do these sorts of things like Professor Watchlist, you're going to see that naturally start to happen. We have to be bold. And I, like I said, I've never been more hopeful. One thing that's really unique, I think, in terms of Turning Point is just how optimistic we are. People told Charlie it couldn't be done, that there were no conservatives left on campus. Now we're in over 1,400 schools, right? And growing every single day. So absolutely it can be done, and it will be done.
Do you know what? All through my political life, I was told it couldn't be done. But do you know what? We did it.
You did it.
Well, Candace Owens, fascinating to talk to you. And I have to say, folks, there's one thing about this organisation that really does get to me. It's their motto. It's late to bed, early to rise, work like hell and organise. That's pretty much how I've lived my life since the age of 18. And I'm going to watch with huge interest to see what Turning Point does. I suspect that when Candace Owens says that there are a lot more people out there from all communities that think and feel this way, but have simply been scared to express those opinions, I reckon she could just be onto something. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the last of our four debates took place at Lafayette in Pennsylvania, and that was the most controversial of them because there were protesters carrying placards. The extraordinary thing is, it wasn't the students protesting, it was the university professors.
Brandon Van Dyke, assistant professor of government and law at Lafayette College.
Well, Brandon, I've been here tonight at Lafayette College, and it's been a great debate, you know, a packed auditorium, an overflow, and some really good debates about the nation state versus globalism. But I was hustled in through the back door because there were some protesters outside the front door. And I'm now shocked to find out that these are actually professors that lecture at this university. What do you have to say about that?
Do you know what the sign said that they were holding?
No to bigotry and many other.
Right, it was like...
No to Nigel.
Not up for debate.
Yeah. So it's almost as if there are professors at this school of learning who don't think I should even be allowed to be here.
Yeah, and it's not just Brett Hendrickson and Elaine Reynolds. I mean, they were the two professors who are actually holding up the signs, but it's a much bigger problem than that. For example, the last two faculty meetings, they were dominated by a discussion of whether this debate was an appropriate thing to do, whether it was an appropriate way for Lafayette College to spend its money. Another professor, Josh Sanborn, along with another professor, Vin Cohen, organized a counter event. They basically said this event was a joke, that there was nothing of value that could be gained from it, and so they're putting on an English clown night alternative event.
I'm very flattered.
Yeah. So, I mean, more generally, like, we've brought other speakers. I don't know if you've heard of Jordan Peterson.
Of course.
Yeah, well, we brought Jordan Peterson last week, and a professor here named Robert Blunt, I think, like... you know, ask someone, you know, you're going to the fuckface event. So it's not just like one random professor. It's like, it's pretty, in fact, I think that the sentiments expressed on that placard are mainstream sentiments among humanities and even perhaps social science faculty at Lafayette.
Now, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I thought this place was called a university. And perhaps I've got this wrong. I thought the point of a university was that young minds were exposed to all points of view, and then they, as intelligent human beings and adults, could make their own minds up.
A couple of things to say about this. First of all, what people on that side of the debate will say is that when you bring a person like Nigel Farage to campus, or you bring a person like Jordan Peterson to campus, you are giving a platform to purveyors of hate speech, you are legitimating illegitimate views, you are pushing the Overton window too far to the right, and basically bringing unacceptable ideas into acceptable mainstream discourse. And they say that that is... I think many of them would say, we're actually very pro... First Amendment and free speech, legally speaking, but especially at a private college like Lafayette, we don't think that's a good use of resources, and we actually think it's counterproductive. So that is one thing that they say. So a lot of people will say things like, I support free speech, but I oppose hate speech. But
17.4 million people in the greatest exercise in democracy ever seen in the United Kingdom voted for the view that I'd propagated for 25 years. I mean, do these people think that the majority of Brits are hateful?
Probably, or at least duped. Duped. I think duped, ignorant. I think, okay, this is why the Mill series exists, because we've been arguing that perspectives like Brexit is a good thing or Trump should be the president are perspectives that should be debated openly on a college campus. Now, a lot of professors think that it is not possible for a well-informed, morally decent person to hold those views. And so they actually think it's counterproductive intellectually to discuss them. I'll say one more thing. If you or anyone else is interested, Jonathan Haidt has this interesting distinction. He says that American universities, and this is probably true of universities across the Anglophone world, have to make a decision about whether they are fundamentally oriented toward the pursuit of truth or they are social justice activist organizations. And he says there's a schism occurring in the academy right now between professors who think that the goal of the university is to pursue truth and those who actually think, no, the goal is to pursue a particular agenda that is left of center, that is all about protecting marginalized groups from hate speech and other things.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Moving on.
My name is Abdul, and I am a senior. I'm an international affairs and religious studies major.
Now, we met earlier.
Yes.
And you said to me that you were much more of a left of centre person looking at this.
Yeah.
And how do you view left of centre professors standing outside holding up No to Nigel placards?
Right. I mean, see, I don't quite consider them to be left of center, because the point is that there is something happening, and I mostly worked on the student side of this. So, and I have to admit that students have been much easier to deal with in terms of getting them to come attend.
What than the professors?
Than the professors, yeah. That has been
definitely.
Which is why, I'm sure.
That's not a joke. That's actually true.
I would like to believe that you thought our students were quite well behaved today. And
do you know what they were? They were terrific, yeah. and. I'm sure that, you know, as I got up to speak, the majority thought I was some sort of terrible devil figure, but they paid me in a proper democratic way the respect right. of listening to what I had to yeah. say. And that was a very good grown-up right. thing. And yet it was the professors that were outside protesting.
And if you notice, not a single student was outside protesting. Now, what I do want to posit here is that there is a tendency today that that people who are on the far left, at least in student circles, and there is a minority subset of the social justice left, I would say, on campus, a minority within it, who tend to see anyone who critiques the far left is often seen as a stooge for the far right. Well, and that is a dichotomy I don't buy. And so it has taken us a lot of smaller conversations individually with students who I spoke with personally, and then we came to where we have gotten today so as to host a speaker, like yourself and like President Fox, and have what I thought was a reasonable debate with the students participating in it. And so I think, I wrote an article in the newspaper, in the student newspaper, about a year ago, in which I called it Dear Faculty, a Liberal's Critique. And what I had asked them that, the essence of education is in the autonomy to think for ourselves. And I requested them to give us the respect that we can decide for ourselves what to listen and what not to listen. And I'm quite glad that the students took that seriously.
They are great words, I must say. I want to thank both of you for having the courage to speak out on this. I have to say, I am really disturbed at what's happening in universities, and it's not happening just in America, it's happening in Britain, it's happening elsewhere. You know, I was brought up to believe that critical thinking meant you were presented different points of view and you made your own minds up. But I see there's a level of indoctrination going on out here. And I will be posting online photographs of the professors with their No to Nigel signs. Well, I'm struck by something really rotten at the heart of our educational establishments on both sides of the pond. The idea that professors who are teaching young people to go out into the world as balanced individuals want people like me banned from campuses, I think is very, very alarming. Boy, we need serious educational reform. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe.